concerning, because that's the kind of press. I don't want more hate crimes here. I don't want swastikas on temples and things like that. So I think we've been really sloppy in a lot of regards. But Michael Simmons is a really nice guy, and I think you should get to know him and overcome your trepidation. Like they say, write an email, write a letter, give him a phone call. He's so nice. He's very funny. He talked about Foucault. He lived in Los Angeles and New York. He's a very well-traveled conversational guy. He's actually related to Neil Simon, the great comic writer, and his dad wrote for Different Strokes, which I found really touching, and the Carol Burnett show. And you might find that you like him and that we could build community here without any kind of adversarial, overwhelming appeal. I'm sure you have more Kafouri lawsuits to be fighting with your city attorney, so why drain your resources when you probably have some very serious instances of brutality to address? And that fiscal drain and the PR drain are not being assessed. We've got Chas killers in the mental health organization, in your mental health unit. We have Kyle Nice still being dispatched. There's a lot of strange behavior that doesn't show a level of compliance. I would suggest, this picture is a picture that Judge Simon has. This is Ben Pickering's care dog. And without his care dog, he was brutalized. And then there's
Mary, you need to wrap up.
Oh, thank you. And there's a whole big article for you to read about his original brain injury and why people like him shouldn't be assaulted by the police.
Thank you.
And Immergood did a great job, by the way.
All right, thanks very much. Okay. Next.
Next, Ben Pickering, Michelle Munt, Lightning.
Okay, Mr. Pickering, go ahead.
Benjamin H. Pickering, resonate the mind. A lot of exciting stuff here today. I mean, we filled in on some people new at this, don't know what's really going on at the city. Anyway, Lone Bet shirt right here. I wanted to support this today. He's back in the office. We're back in the building today. Anyway, I'm a police brutality victim. I've had things happen to me, but I wanted to talk more about the city. I mean, like, they always say that. I watched this video, it used to be on TV all the time. Bad boys, what you gonna do when they come for you, you know? And you got the cops, and you got the citizens, and you got people that live and do their normal day job, and they put their suit on, and they live for that, the moment of truth, which is trusting somebody and giving someone something to trust in. But, like, on a point of view of, like, who brings up a ballot or something toward what is wrong, like, if you were to, yeah, you always hear these cases, like, Greg Gaffori, if we're fighting his case for the $570,000 settlement for what that guy been beat up, socked in the face, and what had happened to him. I was sitting there experiencing it, and I had to walk out and excuse myself because I broke down in tears because I had been brutalized myself by four officers. And they even not only put me on trial and accused me, but had relived my accident all over until the day that I had came to trial of not guilty on all the charges in one mistrial. But, like, if you run all their statements that cops put in from 10 years back, I mean, you can see every cop that has started on the force from way back from, I mean, you know, since Portland had started, the Burrell. But, like, concurrently how they write their statements and put them in, concurrently, if you're looking at it, forensic files, and you look at them, their statements concurrently of everything they bring people in, and yeah, like, for example, for just a short example, here's the guy that had got the $570,000 settlement. Here's his statement, but, like, concurrently, where's all the other people that were blamed or just took the plea bargain or went through the courts? But, like, concurrently, I give everybody the honest, the gratitude for being honest and being part of our police world and being out there and protecting and serving, keeping people safe. But, I mean, running concurrently, I mean, who does the investigation against them? I mean, there is a lot more criminal act out there, and there's a lot more things going on. You say bad boys, what you going to do? I don't care if you're a cop or a criminal. You do the crime, you do some time. They've been doing some crime. People's loved ones been hurt, people going through anguish, you can't even begin to sit down on the side of the road and be one of those people and watch the traffic go by or even feel what it feels like to be loved. I mean, yeah, the money of root of all evil, overly overripe to the bottom of the food chain, and you got these people watch everybody that live their everyday job And you guys are the ones, everybody that's in our city, in our county, and we're the ones that stand up and believe in what? Everything that people bring to the attention of your guys' sense of humor and sensitivity of how, what's the actions of what it feels like? I don't know. I can't even go one or two or even count to a million before I even count how many things are wrong. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome, Lightning.
Yes, my name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Rethink Lab. This appeal to me is very questionable on the timing. It's very questionable on why you have not written a letter to the judge, at least to possibly not even get a response and go from there. Another issue I have on this is that I'm going to say, Commissioner Novick, I think you're very adversarial against Judge Simon. And I find this very interesting. You made quotes to the Mercury. Judge Simon is doing something legally wrong and very odd. And I find that an interesting statement to make to a judge on this settlement, because, correct me if I'm wrong, if we go through this appeal process, could this really unravel this settlement? And in my opinion, and I'm not an attorney, I think it could lead in that direction, and that's my opinion. And another issue, like I've stated, is that the city attorney, I'm sure, is very happy to get moving forward on this, because it's public's money that we're going to be spending here. I would like to have a cap set on this appeal before this is approved. I want to know the amount of money you plan on spending on this. I want a cap to be set on that, and I do not want this approved without that being put into place. Now, correct me if I'm wrong on this, is that we have a settlement already that has been agreed upon by the judge. The settlement will continue to move forward. You want some more clarification on this. I don't think an appeal is necessary at this time to do that, in my opinion. I think there's other directions you could go. I don't think you have to spend city's money or the public's money to find this out. And everything I've seen on this is we want more oversight. By leaving this settlement in place as it's currently agreed upon, I believe that we have that additional oversight. And again, some people brought up, what is the big concern? What is making you so nervous to have maybe some additional oversight? And it's my understanding Judge Simon will not be looking and reviewing this for possibly 6 months to a year. So what is the big concern right now on that issue?
Lightning, can I respond to a couple
absolutely.
Of those things? One thing I want to say is that Judge Simon is actually a personal friend of mine, and I have great respect for him. I think he's making a mistake here. In terms of what the concern is, one of my concerns, and I don't know if I speak for anybody else, is that I think that Judge Simon is setting himself and the rest of us up for disappointment, in that I think that if he has this annual hearing where he's hearing evidence, some people will think that that's an opportunity to go before the judge and say all the bad things the police are doing and ask him to fix it. And either he's going to say, no, actually, that's not my role. My only role is to oversee the settlement between DOJ and the city. And if DOJ isn't saying they're out of compliance, I can't do much. Or he's going to feel tempted to go beyond the scope of the settlement and sort of act himself as an additional prosecutor, which would be inappropriate. So I think that one problem is that he's putting himself in, frankly, in what I think might be wind up being an untenable situation.
And if I could just respond to that.
One more thing.
Okay.
Which is that there actually has been significant, people keep on saying, why don't we just ask the judge what he meant? There actually was significant back and forth between our lawyers and the judge on the question of what his final order would look like. And our lawyers proposed a version of an order which said the COCO will appear before the judge once a year, and the judge will have an opportunity to ask the COCO questions. But in the proposal that we submitted, we said, for example, absent a motion to enforce the settlement agreement by the United States or the City of Portland, the court will not use the annual report appearance to sua sponte, which means sort of on its own. Mm-hmm. Order the parties to administer, enforce, or construct the settlement agreement in any particular way. So the fact that the judge did not accept that suggestion as to what the limitations of the hearing would be, and the fact that the judge said that the parties might have to present evidence as directed by the court, leaves us really confused as to what's going on, and that confusion remains after there'd been extensive back and forth between our lawyers and the judge.
Okay, if I may respond to that.
Briefly, and then
okay, briefly, just a few more seconds of my time, sir. If you are, in fact, a friend of Judge Simon, and you believe that he is a good judge, and he has made his final opinion on this agreement, as a friend, don't you think it would be more advantageous to maybe get together and have a discussion before you try to appeal and take him in and make him look like an incompetent judge?
Actually, it would be thoroughly inappropriate for me as a city official to meet directly with the judge. And I mean, he's by letter, written form is what I meant.
To write a letter.
Yeah. He's a friend, and I think he's a very smart guy. But yes. All of us have friends that occasionally make mistakes, and I think that is the case here.
Okay, and I disagree with you on that, and I think Judge Simon, your appeal won't go anywhere. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, who else we have signed up, Sue?
Okay, yes, we have about seven left. David Elton, Crystal Olinsky, Ross Bennett. They'll be followed by Trudy Cooper, Joe Walsh, Nancy Newell, and then Stephen Entwistle at the end.
Okay, welcome.
Thank you. My name is David Howard Elton. I live in the vicinity of 102nd and Burnside. You might call it the heart of darkness, where a lot of crime happens. Tonight you've had 15 people kind of throw bows and throwing arrows at you. I would take a little bit of a more ambassadorial tone, because I actually don't distrust you or the Department of Justice. I actually think Mike Reese is a decent guy that's doing a very difficult job. I come from a background where I was abused by police in 1986 in Palo Alto, California, while I was a student at Stanford Law School. A few years ago, I was mistreated by a police officer in Lake Oswego. The city of Lake Oswego had to pay me for that. I had a situation where a police officer ran over my BlackBerry and my glasses and made me watch it. They went backwards and forwards. So I've had some negative interactions with police, but for the most part, most police officers, in my opinion, and I'm a researcher by trade, 90 to 95 and maybe even 98% of all police officers are very good and noble, and they have very few complaints against them. It's the few that we have problems with where you really have to hone in and have oversight on them. Now, very, very few people will step up to a public microphone and say, I am mentally ill. I don't like to say that out loud, but I was diagnosed at Stanford with, back then we called it manic depression. Now it's called bipolar. Now it's trendy. But it's a frightening thing to know that that there may not be efficient oversight in your city. I raised five kids in Spokane, Washington. I have not been here that long. I grew up in Lake Oswego, but most of my life is in Spokane. There are four cities in America that have problems right now. And you know about Albuquerque, New Mexico. We all know about Ferguson. The other two cities are Portland and Spokane. Spokane just went through a system where they actually did finally get oversight, not with subpoena power, but they got some oversight. The people that spoke here tonight, the Albina Ministry, the president of that group, Kate Glore, Dan Handelman, who I met a couple years ago because I started a CopWatch version in Spokane. The fifth person spoke about the writ of mandamus. Over and over, people talked about the lack of trust. I would say that most people watching this at home, they're kind of in the middle. Not everybody distrusts you and the police, but we wonder what is happening right now. The people, the voters, the citizens out there, this is a unique period of time where you can choose to go one way and kind of have this adversarial and get lost in court with the appeal process, or you can actually take a leadership role and do something bold. I trust you. I trust the police. Not all the time. Oversight is necessary. Whether you take the ombudsman approach, like the city of Boise and the city of Spokane, or if you start your own system, I would suggest you listen to the people speaking tonight and do not go through this appeal. It could create more problems than it's worth. Trust me. Thanks.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hello, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Crystal Olinsky. I represent 10,000. And not trendy, but... yes, bipolar. I'd say delusional is sometimes a issue we all have. It's kind of hard to follow that last one up. Wow. So, But yeah, there are cities with problems everywhere across this country. And the funny thing is you start to see the patterns very clearly, just like with the Mohammed case. Once you see this and you hear about it in other cities, it clicks. And we're thinking this is a problem with the culture. It's not going to take yet another IPR or CRC. I mean, in Ferguson, they don't even get that. But they're looking at us saying, well, Portland had that. And in my case, the IPR deleted my file immediately. And when I went to their boss, the auditor, she wouldn't do anything about it. So there's no oversight. And so when I look at issues like this, I can't really answer, and I'm not really sure why we're discussing an appeal right now. I just know from my experience since I've been paying attention here in Portland, Kendra James, it's just gotten worse. And, of course, we have more homeless. We have more with homeless and the economy of domestic violence. We have child trafficking. We have drug abuse. But I am more and more losing trust in our city services, and that's especially the police, especially in my neighborhood where every day there's constant barrage of different vehicles that the police own, whether they be undercover, big SUVs, helicopters. It's grating. And all the time I've been there, there's been like one shooting that was never explained. And whenever there's something in my neighborhood, they won't tell me when I call the police station. So I don't trust it. And to say as City Hall, well, we want our citizens to trust the police, that's the aim, that's the goal. Well, citizens don't really trust City Hall. So there is a bubble being burst here, but when Judge Simon actually listened, I felt like he was listening to us, and the agreement was that we as citizens, I feel the Albino Ministerial Alliance has been working on this for so long that we had ideas that looked like they would work. So if I look at the waste of resources and the hypocrisy, why is it that just recently when Chief Reese was being interviewed, that he was saying, everything's fine, we've been implementing this sort of thing all along, but a lot of what's in the DOJ settlement has never been discussed. So to say that we're already on it and we're already doing it and we're not going to waste time or resources is ridiculous. It's a complete lie. And we keep torturing people right out here outside of City Hall. I think it's horrible. We haven't improved, and I don't... If we can appeal this, why can't we appeal, like, ask for an exception or an extension on the reservoir, the reservoirs, covering up the reservoirs for the EPA. So that's a bit hypocritical to me. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, welcome.
My name is Ross Bennett. I'm a former secretary of Dignity Village, so I've kind of got vetted in the streets. I'm also, though I'm not going to speak as a villager, I'm going to speak as a parent because I have kids, and I'm sure you all do too. And I have a question for you four. What if Kendra James was your daughter? Would you be hiding behind this legal wrangling? Would you?
Of course not. That's not what we're doing here.
But I feel you are. Like many of these people said, it's a trust issue. Why are you spending the taxpayers' dollar when you can simply write a letter and say, what is it? Clarify it for me, Judge. Why does it have to go to an appeal, which obviously buys you time to actually deal with the problem? Right is right and wrong is wrong. That's what my dad always taught me. I shouldn't have to have a teacher tell me that I have to do something in class. If I know I'm supposed to do it, I should do it. And I'm just going to leave it at that.
Okay. Thank you.
Just so you know, though, we are implementing the settlement. We are doing everything, including the judge's order for the annual hearings.
But you are appealing it.
Not
the whole settlement.
No, we're not appealing the whole settlement.
A partial part of it. Why can't you just take it as whole?
Because we don't know what it means. So we need to find out.
But can't you just write a letter and find out?
We're going to have the city
attorney
come back.
We'll ask that question to our city attorney. Thank you. Thanks for raising it.
Trudy Cooper, Joe Walsh, Nancy Newell. And then Stephen, you'll be the final one.
You're on first.
Thank you. Mayor Hales and City Council, I'm Trudy Cooper, and I'm a citizen of Northeast Portland. I would like to, I've listened to all this and revised my comments several times, but I think what it still comes down to is that I would really like to urge you to vote no on your resolution, because I think it really sends the wrong message, a message that in the long run you won't want to send, and that's that you want to back off from public involvement. I mean, Commissioner Novick, I think I was hearing you say something like that about, does this open this up to more parties challenging and so on? Mm-hmm. And I think that during the process, you opposed Judge Simon's involvement. It looks like now you want to limit it. What that looks like to members of the community, especially the ones who have experienced great loss, that, and not just loss, but not just the past and not just the years that it took, but all the fear for the future. I went to the hearings, and I was very impressed with what I thought I was observing in Judge Simon. People with their very personal stories made real to him their pain, their loss, that the excessive force had resulted in real deaths, that it had taken years for this to get to this point. And we have years ahead of us. This is a multi-year process. The process of oversight has to be a model for the country. This is where we are now. This is where we are in this country, these issues. I'm all for clarity, but if the goal is to reduce his role, I think that the message that you're sending is that you want to reduce the role of the community. My impression of Judge Simon and the way that he spoke to the group that was there was that he understood that what he thought his role was to facilitate a rebuilding of that trust. So I'm hoping that as you go forward, that it's your interest in rebuilding trust, in rebuilding those burned bridges that drives you, rather than some sense of, some form of hurt feelings that I think, Commissioner Fritz, I was hearing when you said, it's like we're on probation. I mean, if this is some form of feeling of loss of status, it seems like a kind of an indulgence compared to what the community has been through for decades. It seems like this could be worked out directly, not through a legal appeals process. It seems like, I mean, what I would love to see you do is bring all your creativity to this, embrace this process rather than just tolerate it. Bring all your creativity to make this a process that works for everybody. I think we can do that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Trudy. Ms. Walsh.
My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice. The ACLU, the Lawyers Guild, League of Women Voters, Individuals for Justice, Cop Watch, all of the committees and all of the people that have worked on this for years and years are telling you not to do this. And think about what's going to happen here. You're going to lose. You're going to appeal to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeal, which, if you know anything about this court, they defend their judges. They don't like it when someone criticizes their judges. And that's what you have to do. You have to go and you have to say, this judge is wrong. Just like Commissioner Novick said, this judge is wrong. And you have to say that to judges that like this judge. He's very popular. So you're going to lose, and you're going to waste the money. And in the paperwork that you submitted on this, you said there's no cost involved in this. Now, I want you to beg this, because I have never heard of going to an appellate federal court with no cost. It's free. It's not going to cost you. It's not going to cost your city attorney. It's not going to cost fees. It's not going to cost 2 years of messing around with this. For what? Because a judge wants to look over your shoulder. And let's be clear, that's what he wants, because he doesn't trust you like we don't. We don't trust this body. We don't trust the police department. We don't trust the Department of Justice either. We trust this judge. 60 of us, organizations, testified for 2 days with this judge, and he was stunned by our testimony. And he was concerned enough to say, I can only do one of two things, either accept or reject this settlement. That's his options. That's it. However, he can hold it over your head and say, you know what? I just had this small thing. I want you to come once a year and tell me what you're doing. And if you do that, I'll let this go. And I'm telling you right now, if you go into the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals and tick this judge off, you know what? He still has the ability, and ask your city attorney this question. He has the ability to say, that's it. Go to court. You're on trial, just like the other cities. We got a bargain here, folks, and you're screwing it up. And if you go into the Ninth Circuit and you waste the money and you lose, you all should resign. You should resign, every one of you that sign on to this, because you're embarrassing us. This will be a national embarrassment when you finish with it. And for what? For what? You're wasting money, you're wasting time, you're embarrassing us, and you get nothing at the end because the judge holds the keys. Do not mess with a federal judge. I'm telling you, I worked in federal employment for a long time and dealt with federal judges because I was a chief steward for the IBEW under federal sector, and we had to deal with federal judges. Do not mess with them. If you embarrass this judge, I'm telling you, you're going to lose, and you're going to lose big. And we are going to be very, very angry.
Thank you. Welcome.
I'm losing time. Can it be reset?
Yes, it is.
I'm Nancy Newell. I've been a longtime activist here, and I just want to put on record because I was part of a wonderful experience. We wouldn't even be in this courtroom, or this council, because if Trojan were not stopped by the Kafuri family and the wonderful work that they did, we wouldn't even be here. It would be vacated. So I just want to make sure that people are well aware of the wonderful work they do for this community. And I joined in that work. I would like to bring to your attention why there is not trust. This is what is happening, and the President of the United States has just recently, because of Ferguson, brought it to the attention of the entire nation when we're experiencing it. Police officers come to our neighborhood association fully vested with things that we don't even know what the use is. And when I asked a question, it was joked about. I went to the training building, the new opening. I went to several different people touring. I went to a room where there are mats. I know that a student, a very good student at Roosevelt High School, was assaulted by a police officer in his own neighborhood and his brother. And these training dummies, about this high, are all black. And it was a black officer that I spoke to. And I said, don't you think that that helps police officers that have not been a good example in this community about racism to once again profile? And he said, no, it's just because white gets dirty. Well, and the company, that's all they're provided. Well, these companies are providing tons of equipment to local police stations and officers and the JTTF, et cetera. What's in our community is not to be trusted. And we don't even know what it is, some of it. But some of that technology can look into our houses. We have no clue that it's happening. There's drones at Manzanita Beach. So if you say you want to set, and I fully support Kate Lohr, I fully support every objection to this method. I don't trust the city law's office because I've been up against them, and I've won every single time. So I would trust your own feeling about the community. If this is a request by very distinguished members of your community, please honor it. I think that's a key thing to pay attention to today. I think this has to be addressed immediately to find out what our police department is doing and what they're doing with equipment. The SWAT team that was on display at this training building, didn't even acknowledge that 4 years ago in Dawson Park, they had a SWAT team out for two African-Americans having a fistfight. The following week, there were white people that were having a fistfight, and nothing was done, and it was really disruptive of the people in the community, though, that wanted to continue with their enjoyable day. So we've got some real problems here, and I don't envy your position. I mean, it's a tough position, a very complex society, and all these kinds of things happening, but I think that you can play a much better role in this kind of action you're taking today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, and de-escalation I participate in with teens.
Thank you.
And our last speaker is Stephen Entwistle. Here he is.
Good evening, Mayor and City Council members. I'm Stephen Entwistle. I live in downtown Portland. I am a founder of the Healing Man Sanctuary, which is a futuristic concept on the problems that we're dealing with houselessness and other issues. A little bit further in depth than, say, an R2-D2, which is just a rest area. That being said, we spent a lot of time on this, and I've got some other folks that are with me on this. And anyway, the issue about trust, okay? Amanda says that she wants everybody to trust, okay? You guys and the police, okay? When is my question? Because right now, we have, we're being harassed by, quote, police informants that are posing as tramps and houseless folks living out in front of City Hall. Okay, and they are there to harass us, okay? And we know what's going on, and but is that, I mean, there's nobody that's doing anything that's wrong, okay? But then this person, right, if I can give you a name, do you want to know the name of this person?
Probably better not.
Okay, or the name of the person that this person, the city official, that this person is dealing with on a regular basis. Can I say his name?
Probably better to do that in a letter or something rather than make accusations in a public.
Okay, I respect that. But there's a trust issue here, okay, that apparently you're not following what you're saying as far as trust. That is not trustworthy, okay, to send somebody out to personally harass people, to data mine information on their police record, and then bringing their police record to them in public and yelling at them about what they'd done in the past and embarrassing them and making them angry and upset to the point of suicide, to the point of violence, just so they can go to jail. You're doing this every night, okay? You did a good job clearing the park, Chapman Park. Okay, you did a good job of that with that person and the other person that's dealing with this, okay? I know who it is, and I know that they're doing it illegally because that's harassment. And one person had a violent action from that person, and fortunately, that person wasn't hurt, but he could very well have been hurt, okay? That is a potential lawsuit right there. Now, you want to talk about trust, okay? These are houseless folks, just like you, just like you, just like you, just like you, without the money or the resources. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Alan, I know I've got some questions. I suspect other council members do as well. So one subject that came up a number of times in testimony here that it would help for you to explain a little more, and that is, you know, what informal communication has occurred other than an appeal with the judge? You know, can we, by a letter, get an opinion about this this ambiguity, conference among the parties. What about those options? Are those still open to us? What are those doors, and could we go through them?
Yes, Mayor Hills and the City Commissioners. So the communications that have occurred between the parties and the judge have been all on the record. So we've had three oral communications with the judge and three briefings. So I would characterize that as fairly extensive dialogue and communication with the court, in which we were quite clear about the procedures that we wanted to be employed, the manner in which the proceedings we thought would best serve the purposes of community engagement, community oversight, the mechanisms that we had in the agreement. So we definitely had an extensive dialogue with the court, and ultimately the court, although it had previously indicated that it would issue an opinion, only issued an order. So we didn't get guidance from the court in the form of an opinion, but we did get a pretty certain result from the court that the court was not going to adopt the procedures that the parties had agreed on. So that issue is what we need to seek clarification on, and essentially the judge has decided via his order that he is not going to provide clarification in terms of his order. So the appropriate legal venue to seek that clarification at this point is with the Ninth Circuit, because we need to know whether or not we are entitled as a matter of law to have the judge clarify that. As to your second question,
So we requested that order?
Yes.
And what's the difference between a letter seeking clarification and a writ of mandamus? I don't understand what that is.
So I mean, I understand that the point that a lot of people have made, that, you know, why can't you just send a letter to the judge or talk to the judge? But these are judicial proceedings, so we're not in a position where we're authorized legally to write a letter to the judge. We are attorneys, as these are legal proceedings, so we need to file motions and appeals, and I mean, that's the way that you are authorized to communicate with the judge, so certainly a letter would not be appropriate. In terms of what the difference is between seeking clarification via an appeal and a writ of mandamus or a writ of prohibition, they're two different legal mechanisms, and they're different procedures that a supervisory court employs for the parties to seek that kind of clarification about what the lower court's orders are. And so in this case, what we've asked is to keep all of those options open, but what we intend to do is to seek an appeal. It could be that the Ninth Circuit says that's not the correct procedural vehicle, you must actually file a writ. And so those are the two different procedural vehicles. But in terms of seeking clarification directly from the court, we have done that on at least six different occasions.
And you did that in writing as a motion? How does that happen?
We did it both in a motion, two different motions, a memorandum, and the court initially had questions that it asked all of the parties to respond to immediately after the fairness hearing. And so we communicated in writing with the judge about this issue. And then at the hearing right after the fairness hearing and in two status conferences with the judge, we also brought up these issues and indicated what it was that the parties agreed to in terms of the procedures that we wanted to see happen at the hearing.
So there's not an informal track like that now that the order has come down?
That's correct. There's not an informal track.
Yeah.
So is this seeking an appeal to a higher court of a judge's order? It's a judge's order, correct?
Yes.
Is this akin to seeking judicial review of a judge's decision, or is this a highly unusual thing where, you know, I have to say I sort of agree with Joe Walsh that, you know, judges are going to watch each other's back. Just like, you know, we're accused of watching each other's back. Or, you know, I could say the Albina Ministerial Alliance watches each other's back. You know, we all operate in these cliques. And I'm just wondering, are we paddling so upstream to be beyond any hope of a reasonable thing, but we're going to feel good that we did this, but beyond any hope of really getting a ruling?
I think that's a fair question. the reason why I think the issue will be of great interest to the Ninth Circuit is because there is a larger legal issue here that is apart from the practical considerations of this specific case, and that is that parties all the time file settlement agreements in court. And
right. Did you say
file them with the court and ask the court to retain jurisdiction in order to resolve disputes that might arise between the parties under the contract. It is a very common thing that parties do. What is uncommon in this case is that the court imposed conditions in addition to those that had been agreed to by the parties, and in fact imposed conditions that had not been requested by the parties. So it's an important issue that I do think the Ninth Circuit will want to clarify, that whether or not a district judge has that kind of authority to impose conditions that have not been requested or agreed to by the parties, as opposed to conditions that the parties did agree to. So I think that it's not so much a question of trying to limit the judge's authority, or that the Ninth Circuit will perceive that what we're doing is questioning the judge's authority. What we're really trying to do is clarify an ambiguity in the rules of civil procedure that apply to all parties that appear before district courts and attempt to file settlement agreements.
And are there precedents for this within the Ninth Circuit or within any judicial circuit of this country?
I mean, I think that is another reason why the Ninth Circuit will be interested in this issue, and why certainly members of the Oregon Bar have expressed interest in this issue, because there is no precedent. I mean, to be perfectly technical, the rules of civil procedure allow a plaintiff to dismiss a case, and it allows the court to impose conditions on that dismissal, and those conditions are supposed to be for the protection of a defendant. So, for instance, if a plaintiff files a lawsuit and puts the defendant through the trouble of discovery and all of the expense of discovery, and then at the last minute elects to dismiss the case, the rule allows the court to protect the defendant by conditioning the plaintiff's dismissal on things like paying court costs. And so what is very unusual is that the court here has imposed a condition on the defendant, and there is no procedural mechanism for the defendant to protect themselves in the case where a court imposes additional conditions on them. And so this is a case of first impression, both because courts do not, and in at least in our research, we could find no court that had employed the rule in the fashion that Judge Simon has in this case. But it is a case of first impression as to whether or not the rule can or should function in that way, which I know is legalistic and doesn't get to some of the concerns that you heard here today, but I hope it answers your questions about why the Ninth Circuit would be interested in the larger legal issues that are presented by this case.
And they could outright reject our appeal, mm-hmm. right? They can just dismiss it? Is that?
Yes, the Ninth Circuit could choose not to take the appeal.
Yeah, so walk us through that if you could, and that is, what are the possible outcomes here, and what are some of the issues that you want to see clarified that are in the judge's order?
The specific issue that we would like to see clarified is whether or not the procedures that we proposed, which were attempting to be responsive to the judge's desire to have information. And so what the city proposed was that the oversight mechanisms that we have in place produce an enormous amount of information, and that the parties contemplated that that information would be highly public in the form of public reports, town hall meetings, that there would be a community oversight advisory board who could and is charged with interacting with the public, disseminating information about the agreement. And so what we proposed was that the court, understandably and beneficially for us, should have access to that information. And so what we proposed was having our compliance officer go to the court and share all of the information that had been generated. The Department of Justice is required to comment on our compliance in writing, as is the Community Oversight Advisory Board. We proposed that the compliance officer would produce all of that information for the court, and that the court would interact with our compliance officer and ask questions, and the compliance officer would need to respond to those questions. And that was our proposal. And instead, what the judge did was to say, the court is going to inquire and call hearings of unlimited scope and frequency, and with a requirement that any party produce evidence. And that was very different than what we had proposed. And so the very limited issue we want to understand on appeal is whether or not we can give the judge the information in the way that we proposed. And if the Ninth Circuit, they may say either, you know, we just don't think there are, that the greater legal issues that I've just described are important enough to take. They may decide that they are important and that on appeal they're going to, you know, reinstate the agreement and request of the parties as to the nature and scope of the hearings. And that's going to be our request, is that they do just that.
Okay, so frequency you mentioned, isn't it once a year, or it could be more often than once a year?
It can be more often than once a year. Again, Judge Simon had indicated, or the court had indicated, that he would convene these hearings approximately annually, and we had agreed to that. But in the final order, he included language that said that he would be calling the hearings approximately annually or at such other time as the court decided.
Oh,
so,
I see. So
he's left open the possibility that he can call hearings at whatever time and frequency that he desires.
Yeah, okay, I see that. Other questions?
You're on staff of the city attorney's office, so that's why there's no cost for your time, because you can spend it doing this or spend it doing something else.
Yes, that's right.
Are there any fees for appealing?
There are filing fees, and that was probably, if those didn't appear in the fiscal impact statement, that's our error. I believe the filing fees are $400 or less, but I can certainly get a more precise figure for you.
Thank you. And is there a deadline for the appeal to be filed?
Yes, and that's another consideration, is that the deadline, there are different deadlines. There's a different deadline for filing a writ. There's a different deadline for filing an appeal. And so the deadline for filing an appeal is 60 days after the entry of the order. And that 60 days will run on October 28th. So we need to file a notice of appeal, or we would waive our right to appeal at a later date.
And how about the deadline for the writ?
The writ is more flexible, and it depends on a number of factors. But we will probably, because we want to give the Ninth Circuit the option to pick whatever legal vehicle they want, and we will probably file an appeal and a writ at the same time, so in the alternative.
And what we got was that the writ is the more, should be used more rarely. So we would actually rather appeal.
Yes.
But I see. And we have to act today. We can't put it off.
Yes, you have to act today.
But presumably if we vote to appeal, we can withdraw the appeal at any time?
Yes, absolutely. You would still have that option.
And we stay the appeal?
I don't know. I mean, probably you could stay the appeal. But it's likely that if we asked for a stay, that the Ninth Circuit would be less inclined, that they would be more inclined to dismiss the appeal if we asked for a stay.
But at some point, we could decide to withdraw the appeal. And
yes.
Yeah.
Okay. It could be, I mean, conceivably, if we go ahead today, I mean, there's been a lot of talk about this will take years, but, I mean, it could take days, right? I mean, the Court of Appeals could hand us our head on a platter if they want.
Yeah, could you tell us about the timeline? What's the expected?
Sure, yeah. So we will file a notice of appeal, and then at least in Oregon, if they decide that the appeal is the correct route, one of the first things that will happen is we'll probably be sent to mediation, and that will likely be an opportunity, once again, for the parties to get together and to figure out whether or not some of the solutions, some of the initiatives that you heard here today, that will be another opportunity for us to talk about those. The other thing that we'll need to do is some legal proceedings where we designate the record and essentially gather information for the Ninth Circuit. The Ninth Circuit will review our petition, and there are a number of things that they might decide, one of which might be they might ask for further briefing on the issue of what is the appropriate vehicle, and specifically on the issue of, is this a final order? Is it a collateral order? So procedural questions that they might ask for additional briefing. They might, however, simply accept the appeal, or they might simply dismiss the appeal.
But what would be the timeline for the mediation and then for accepting or rejecting the appeal?
It's hard to say, but the order for mediation would likely come within about 30 days of the appeal being filed.
And who would be the parties to the mediation?
At this point, I'm not sure. Clearly, the United States and the city, because we're parties to the settlement agreement, we would be ordered into mediation. It's unclear whether or not the PPA or the AMAC would also similarly be ordered by the Ninth Circuit to join us.
What would be the purpose of that mediation, though, because it's the judge's orders, not... I don't understand what would be on the table for me to mediate.
Mediating between us and the Justice Department, because we've agreed on the settlement, so...
Right. So this is also sort of a technical legal issue, but in a writ where you are you're appealing to a court to give a writ of mandamus or prohibition, there is no mediation. But in an appeal, the presumption is that there are two adversarial parties. You know, there's a plaintiff and a defendant, and so in this case, that's why just automatically we'd be sent to mediation. If I understand your question, it's really what purpose could be served by the mediation, since what we're talking about is the judge's order. But again, I think that's a real opportunity that we should take to talk again to the United States and other parties, if that's available to us, to figure out whether or not we can continue the conversation about what these hearings, you know, should look like.
Right. And so certainly the AMA coalition would be part of that mediation. Would there be an opportunity for other groups who are not currently part of the four-party agreement? For instance, Disability Rights Oregon participated today. Would they be able to participate in that mediation?
I think that's certainly something that we could explore in terms of, I mean, the court defines the terms of the mediation, but the parties are subject to it. So I think we have a good deal of discretion in fashioning what parties we would like to bring to the mediation.
And then as far as the court actually acting if after that piece, what would be the expected timeline? Is it months, years?
It's difficult to say. I mean, in a typical appeal that doesn't present any special issues, it can take years for the Ninth Circuit. If the Ninth Circuit is, you know, particularly interested in resolving this question, they could put it on an expedited, you know, track, which would be at the earliest 9 months. But I think that would be, I would not put money on the fact that the court would decide something that quick. So I think the range that I could give you all is, you know, 9 months to maybe 18 months for resolution.
We would certainly be doing the first annual hearing before Judge Simon under his terms regardless.
I think that's entirely likely. And I'm glad you brought up the point that typically when you are appealing an order, you also seek a stay in court, and we are not doing that. We are not seeking a stay of Judge Simon's order.
Good. So go ahead, Dan. I'm sorry.
Yeah, this, I think my last question. So the U.S. Department of Justice was initially with us on seeking clarification of the judge's order, and now they are not. Is that correct?
The Department of Justice took the position in the lower court that they agreed with us that the procedures that we had proposed that they would support. In addition, the Portland Police Association also supported the procedures that we proposed. But they also argued that the judge did not have to accept our procedures and could impose procedures that nobody had requested or agreed to. Mm-hmm. So they supported our request and joined in it, but they also argued that the judge didn't have to follow the input of the parties.
And that was their position from the get-go, or was that a recent?
That was their final position.
That was their position at the time of the judge's order?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks.
So another concern that got raised here in the hearing was that although we're appealing on this narrow question, that it could somehow unravel the whole agreement. Could you comment on the likelihood of that?
That likelihood is extremely unlikely. The judge, in assessing the settlement agreement, was required to make a finding as to whether or not the agreement, as on its face, was fair, adequate, and reasonable. The agreement did not include The language that the judge proposed, it did not include a requirement for periodic or annual hearings. So the settlement agreement didn't include any of those terms, and the judge approved that on its face as being fair, adequate, and reasonable. We are not asking, no party will be asking for the Ninth Circuit to undo that decision. So it is highly unlikely that the Ninth Circuit would somehow undo that.
So those 88 decision. Items in the agreement that we're marking our progress against, none of them is under appeal?
None of them is under appeal, and I don't see any way that anyone could challenge Judge Simon's entry of the settlement agreement.
All right. Other questions for Ellen before we take action? So I think we're ready to take a roll call on the resolution then, unless there are other questions or concerns that council wants to raise before we take a vote today. Okay. Please.
No, babe.
I would not want to be a judge of any kind, because a judge is supposed to be a neutral overseer and adjudicator of disputes between parties, and I know that I would have a very hard time being neutral. I'd always want to jump in and mix it up. So I would be a terrible judge. What Judge Simon has done here, I mean, normally, and this is going to sound terribly legalistic, but normally the way things work, as Ellen Osanaka said, is that if parties come to an agreement, they present it to a judge, and the judge does have the authority to say, no, I don't like this agreement, and throw it out. But a judge can also say, no, I adopt the agreement and make it an order of the court. I have never heard of a judge saying, I adopt the agreement, but I want other stuff done too. It's just not something that judges do. And one could say, well, why does that matter? Okay, so the judge, added something onto the agreement. Why do we care? I think one reason to care is that I really think that this order could lead to really problematic situations, because I think we've heard actually in the testimony today that a lot of people now see the judge as their advocate. We want the judge to be an advocate to ensure that the police behave well. And actually, the judge is overseeing a lawsuit between the Justice Department and us. And when the judge's order says that even if the Justice Department isn't saying that we are in violation of the agreement, he might hold evidentiary hearings, I think people in the community will think, well, that means that we have an opportunity to go to the judge and tell him what we think the police are doing wrong, and the judge will fix it. And if that happens, then the judge will either be in a position of saying, I'm sorry, that's not really my role, or be tempted to overstep what his role is and order us to declare that either go beyond the bounds of the consent decree or declare on his own, even without the Justice Department saying it, that the city's in violation. So with all respect to everyone who's testified today and to Judge Simon, who's a very good man, I think that this order creates a very problematic situation. And one thing that I think it does is creates the impression that people who think that we're not abiding by the agreement should be going to the judge, when really the appropriate people to go to if they think they're not abiding by the agreement is the Justice Department. They're the ones that sued us. They will be monitoring compliance. So if people think that we are not in compliance with the agreement, they're the ones that people should go to. I mean, I am not saying that everybody should trust the police or the council or even the COCOL or the COAB. I'm just saying that the way things work legally is that the Justice Department is in charge of monitoring our compliance, and if you have problems, you can go to them, and then they can go to the court and say, we're not in compliance, do something about it. And so that, again, I'm sure that sounds hopelessly legalistic, and I'm not expecting any sympathy, but it's because I think that the judge is sort of departing from the normal role of being a judge in ways that could cause all of us problems, that I support the appeal. Aye.
Fritz.
It troubles me greatly to disagree with so many great leaders in our community, people who, before I was on this council, I was in your seats and advocating from the community with the community. I went from being a registered nurse, which is the most trusted profession in the country, to being a politician, which is the most despised. And I chose to run for a second term because I wanted to be part of this implementation, because the people of Portland need to be able to trust their police. I'm almost given up on ever getting trust back in politicians, but it used to be that the politicians were good people who tried to get the best things to happen, and I know many good politicians. I don't expect anybody to agree with that. The reason I can't do what you asked me to do and not appeal is because that would be saying that I don't trust myself and that I need the oversight of a judge to do the right thing, and I don't agree with that. I need the